Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Parivrajakacharya Stotara Sarashi Srimant Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Goswami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivrajakacharya Stotara Sarashi Srimant Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Narayanam Namaskritam Naram Chaivam Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Datho Jayam Udirayat Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki Maitre Uvacha By Srila Prabhupada. Sri Maitreya said, Devahuti was fully faithful and respectful toward the direction of her husband Kardama, who is one of the Prajapatis, or generators of human beings in the universe. O great sage, she thus began to worship the master of the universe, the supreme personality of Godhead, who is situated in everyone's heart, responsibly. Sri Maitreya said, Prabhupada, this is the process of spiritual realization. One has to receive instruction from a bona fide spiritual master. Kardama Muni was Devahuti's husband, but because he instructed her on how to achieve spiritual perfection, he naturally became her spiritual master also. There are many instances wherein the husband becomes the spiritual master. Lord Shiva also is the spiritual master of his consort, Parvati. A husband should be so enlightened that he should become the spiritual master of his wife in order to enlighten her in the advancement of Krishna consciousness. Generally, stri, or woman, is less intelligent than man. Therefore, if the husband is intelligent enough, the woman gets a great opportunity for spiritual enlightenment. Here it is clearly said, samyak shraddhaya, that with great faith one should receive knowledge from the spiritual master, and with great faith execute the performance of service. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary on Bhagavad Gita, has especially stressed the instruction of the spiritual master. One should accept the instruction of the spiritual master as one's life and soul. Whether one is liberated or not liberated, one should execute the instruction of the spiritual master with great faith. It is also stated that the Lord is situated in everyone's heart. One does not have to seek the Lord outside. He is already there. One simply has to concentrate on one's worship in good faith, as instructed by the bona fide spiritual master, and one's effort will come out successfully. It is also clear that the Supreme Personality of Godhead does not appear as an ordinary child. He appears as he is. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, he appears by his own internal potency, Atma Maya. And how does he appear? He appears when pleased by the worship of a devotee. A devotee may ask the Lord to appear as her son. The Lord is already sitting within the heart, and if he comes out from the body of a devotee, it does not mean that the particular woman becomes his mother in the material sense. He is always there, but in order to please his devotee, he appears as her son. Maitreya Uvacha Devahutyapi Sandesham Goravena Prajapate Samyak Shraddhaya Purusham Kutastan Abhajad Gurum. Sri Maitreya said, Devahuti was fully faithful and respectful toward the direction of her husband Kardama, who was one of the Prajapatis, or generators of human beings in the universe. O great sage, she thus began to worship the master of the universe, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in everyone's heart. Although the Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart and is following or wandering with the living entity, including the human being, through all different situations in life, as the Suridam Sarvabhutanam, the friend of all beings and the dearmost friend of everyone, he's also beckoning the conditioned soul to undergo the process of renunciation. In the material world, everyone is hankering after enjoyment and friendship and combinations of these things. So Krishna, as he states, he is the best friend of everyone. He is also Pitanam Sarvabhutanam Aham Bija Pradapitam. He's the father of all living beings. Still, even though there's great affection in the material sense for a father, for a son, the Supreme Lord is giving constant impetus to renounce the material world and to cut the bonds of material affection and to develop spiritual affection, which means that, as we were hearing yesterday, the grantha hrida, the hard knot in the heart, which is the bond of affection, has to be cut. In this instance, the Lord is taking birth as a son, and this son of Devahuti, who is Lord Kapila, becomes the spiritual master of his mother. Just as is mentioned here, the husband sometimes becomes the spiritual master of the wife. A spiritual master should be accepted from any condition of life. One cannot understand the nature of a spiritual master or any Vaishnava, it is said. One cannot understand by any means except by devotional service, as is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhakti Mama Vijanati Yavanyashta Shmitatvataha. Devotional service, then, is emphasized as the only means by which one can understand the Supreme Lord and by which one can actually undertake the process of renunciation. So even though Kardama is a Prajapati or progenitor of the universe, he also has to take the vow of renunciation or to become renounced from material affection after undergoing various material processes of progenating the universe. So even though there's great affection from the father to the son, or the mother to the son, or from the son to the father and the mother, in spiritual life, these bonds of affection become bonds of spiritual relationships. Therefore, Krishna is called Rishikesh, or the master of the senses. When the senses become purified and one tries to please the senses of the Lord, then all the different types of affection through the senses become completely spiritualized. This is the instruction that Kardama gives to Devahuti and that Kapila gives to Devahuti. One must become renounced. So everyone, in the end, develops a familial affection for the entire family of living entities, not just one's own, as Prabhupada used to say, one's own min, but everyone, all living entities, not just human beings, but all non-humans, all plants, all species, birds, reptiles. This becomes the greater family. So everything leads in spiritual life towards the greater family of Krishna. And as we were hearing yesterday, Krishna takes birth in many different forms, completely by his own desire. And as we were reading here, he's very sensitive to the desires of his devotees. So when one desires Krishna as the son, Krishna becomes very pleased by that great devotion to take birth in that particular form. Krishna likes to be, he's very affectionate, so he accepts worship from those who are very pure, who have become very renounced in their thinking. It's mentioned later on in this chapter that sannyas is forbidden in this age, because generally in the age of Kali, people are so fallen that they can't undertake such strict vows. So it is one of the five sacrifices that is mentioned in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita as forbidden in this age of Kali. But renunciation takes place within the heart, and therefore one can become renounced in any position of life, as a householder, as a progenitor, as a man, as a woman. Renunciation and different types of sannyas can take place. This is real sannyas as described in Bhagavad Gita, not one who is inactive or lights no fire, but one who engages in active works of devotion. And we read in Chaitanya Chaitamrita that Gadadhar Pandit took another type of sannyas, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur also approved, called Kshetra sannyas, in which husband and wife repair to a quiet solitude, to a quiet place, and undergo vows of vanaprastha, and effectively live the life of a sannyas. So renunciation or sannyas doesn't have to be the province only of people who wear orange and who walk around barefoot to traverse the world as renunciants in that traditional sense. But real sannyas is engaging in constant devotion to the Lord with full-hearted devotion to the instructions of the spiritual master. As Prabhupada is saying here, the instruction should become the life and soul of a devotee. So when we say one takes shelter of the spiritual master, it means actually taking shelter of instructions. The spiritual master gives instructions, you do this, you do that, what to do. So the shelter is not to live in a material way, to want benefits and benedictions from a father-like figure, but to understand what the instruction is and to try to fulfill that particular mission with great devotion and great care and great attention. This is the meaning of surrender or taking shelter. When our desires are none different from the desires of Krishna, then one becomes very satisfied, detached from the material nature which keeps us in this material world. So one who is teaching Krishna consciousness, as we'll read Kapila's glorifying devotional service, may be in any form, maybe a son, maybe a father, maybe a wife, maybe a husband. One doesn't know who the next spiritual master will be. It could be someone who walks into the temple tomorrow. Could be the mailman. One never knows. So Devahuti has been praying, and also Queen Kunti prayed also that even in a very humble condition, Krishna consciousness or Krishna's appearance seems to be meant for very elevated sages, Tatam Paramaham Sanam Muninam Amalatmanam Bhakti Yogam Vidamartam Tatam Pasyema Histriya. How she says, if Krishna consciousness or the appearance of Krishna is meant for only the enlightened sages and those who are completely pure, Amalatmanan, how can ordinary people take advantage of you? So the fact is that because the Lord is resident within the heart of everyone, everyone can actually attain perfection in spiritual life. And it doesn't really matter where spiritual life begins, what kind of birth one has, or what kind of so-called karma one may have. But as Queen Kunti is praying, one can get the benefits, even in a humble position. Prabhupada was speaking on this particular verse once, in Mayapur, I think, and was saying that even the cockroach who walks across the lotus feet of the Lord, the murti, the archa vigraha, gets the same benefit as the pujari and can be considered equal to the pujari. So Krishna is not only the father, but the constant companion of all living beings. And in one sense, even though Kardama appeared to be his father, and Devahuti the mother of this very powerful Shaktivesh incarnation, Kapila Dev, who taught Sankhya philosophy, no one is actually, in the material sense, as Prabhupada is indicating here in this purport, no one can become the mother or the father of Krishna. His birth is completely independent of any material situation. It doesn't take place in the ordinary way. So Krishna is understood in a unique way. Devahuti takes the instruction of Kardama Muni as her spiritual master, and as is mentioned here, she begins to worship him as the master of the universe. When Yamaraj instructs his carriers, the Yamadutas, who have come to take Ajamila away, He explains that it is not easy to understand the actual situation of the Supreme Lord, because they have made an error. Even they, the great judges of human behavior, made an error. So he explains to them that it is not always easy to determine the position of the Supreme Lord or even his devotees. Devotees often act in an apparently ordinary sense, but actually they're acting completely on the spiritual platform, even though they may appear to be doing so-called ordinary activities. So Yamaraj instructs his messengers that the Supreme Lord, his actual position cannot be ascertained, not by the senses, not by the mind, not by the life airs, not by thoughts within the heart, not by the vibration of words, but only by engaging in devotional service. Only by, he also says, following my instructions, and he is one of the great Mahajans. Mahajanayena Gatasva Pantad, is said in the Mahabharata that one can only benefit in spiritual life if one is very faithful to following the footsteps of the great authorities. So Yamaraj is considered a great authority, and from time to time has to correct his carriers to be sure that they are actually making the proper judgment and understanding who Krishna is. So as it was mentioned, I believe, in yesterday's purport, human life is meant for this process. The Rishabdev instructed his sons that this is the meaning of human life. It's meant for renunciation. Tapo divyam putraka yena satvam. Unless one sees that human life, the meaning of it is to engage in not only acts of devotion, but in acts of renunciation, to engage in tapas, tapasya. Then one can not actually experience the full pleasure of Brahma Sukhyam, or complete spiritual happiness and pleasure. It's very difficult to understand or to even perceive renunciation, especially in this part of the world, which is geared to material advancement. Everything is measured in terms of the gross national product or in personal wealth. So to understand that the real purpose is to renounce often draws great criticism, and Krishna devotees are seen as living in a rarefied atmosphere, an atmosphere that is not suitable for ordinary human beings. Too renounced, too difficult. And what to speak of giving up sex life? It's considered probably the most horrible thing anybody could do. to give up our so-called God-given attributes of being able to enjoy sex life. But actually, when you look at it, you can see that there is almost no other group in the world, maybe one or two, that are practicing celibacy. And for this, not only this, but this is one of the principal reasons that Krishna consciousness has become such a powerful thing. It has advanced all over the world. Many, many devotees have joined, and a very small group of people has been able to influence many, many people throughout the world because of the power that comes with the spirit of renunciation, as opposed to the spirit of enjoyment, the spirit of distributing knowledge, the spirit of both renunciation and spiritual enjoyment. Prabhupada once said that, he said two things. Once he said that starting this movement was like walking through fire, and another time he said that Krishna consciousness is a system of recreation. of course it's a little bit of both, but the recreation, or the sense of ultimate happiness, paradoxically comes when one learns how to renounce the material world. So the two things are complementary. As one becomes more and more detached from the material world, one begins to renounce everything, jnana vairagya, one becomes more intelligent spiritually, and one actually comes to experience transcendental happiness. It's very difficult for a materialist to understand that we move through different bodies and that we may be suffering due to some past misdeeds. We may have to suffer in this lifetime, or we may even have to suffer more in the future. There's one story we've sometimes heard about a person who is a great materialist, a great landholder in India, and he was extremely greedy. In fact, every time some beggars would come, he would just refuse them. So he was the archetypal kripana or a miser, made huge amounts of money and was very, very greedy. So he had some sons, and he trained them up also to be the same way, not to give in charity. Anyway, one day he passed away, and his sons took over the fortune, and they were also extremely, even more so. And even if a beggar came to their door, they would always be refused. So these people had a reputation for being extremely insensitive and uncompromising about ever giving in charity. So one day a young child of about 5 years old came to the door of this house, and he was walking with a crutch. He only had one leg, and he was very, very poor. He was in tattered rags. And he came knocking at the door and begging. He was very persistent. They wouldn't answer the door. So he just stayed there all day long, and he would every once in a while knock and call out, and nobody would answer. So some of the townspeople became very disturbed by this. They noticed he was staying out here for many, many hours. Why are these very rich people so cold? They won't even come to the door. They won't even answer. So a great sage was passing by late in the afternoon, and a crowd had gathered. And they made an appeal to him that this poor beggar boy has come, and these people who are so rich, they never come to the door for anyone, and they don't even pay attention. Now this poor boy is sick, he's crippled. What should be done? So the great sage, all of a sudden, he began to laugh very heartily. Nobody could understand why he was laughing and laughing and laughing. And finally, after some time, they asked him to explain what he thought was so funny about this very pitiable situation. And he said, actually, because he was a very powerful sage, he could understand the karmic background of this boy and the people in the house and many other people. And so he began to explain to the people that this little beggar boy was actually the father of the men in the house, who was so greedy that he would never give anything to anyone. So this was his karmic punishment. So sometimes it's very difficult to understand for a materialist why some people are born very poor, some people are born very wealthy, some people have to suffer. In coming back, we called one chapter Victim of Affection. It was about the story of King Chitraketu, who had a son who he had great affection for. When his son died, he almost died. And he was praying for years and years and years to have a son. So his son was called Harshashok, means happiness and distress. He was extremely happy, unbelievably happy, and then he was unbelievably sad. And it took Narada Muni to come to explain to him that this was actually not your son, and actually revived the son to tell him, to instruct him, that actually I'm nobody's son, nobody's my mother, nobody's my father. So this Chitraketu is in his past life a victim of affection, not understanding that this is not really my son, and that the purpose of even having a son, the purpose of in getting involved in any relationship, is to advance the cause of devotion, is to become more devotional. Prabhupada once said, when devotees were in the early days taking mates as husbands and wives, he said, your marriage shouldn't be that you cut your devotional service in half. It should mean that you double your devotional service. So, all affection, although it is ultimately meant for renunciation, it's ultimately, most ultimately, meant to increase Krishna consciousness. Because this, in fact, especially in Kali Yuga, is what we mean by renunciation. To develop love for Krishna means to give up the material world and to develop real happiness and real friendship. One sees that everyone is in this great family of Krishna. This is the Krishna conscious vision of the world. And this is what all the great sages throughout all time have taught. Maharaj Parikit was another great saint. And it is explained, as is the case with many of them, their character is so great that they consider all their subjects, all the people of the world, to be of their own family. And they work very hard to improve their quality of life, as they call it today, or to make them happy by giving them transcendental knowledge. So this is actually the mission of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, to bring happiness to everyone by showing that their quality of their living can be improved. So by distributing knowledge, by distributing prasadam, by chanting the holy name, people can begin to take the first step on this path of renunciation and Krishna consciousness. So, read the verse again. Maitreya Uvacha Devahutyapi Sandesham Gauravena Prajapate Samyak Shraddhaya Purusham Kutastan Abhajad Gurum. Sri Maitreya said, Devahuti was faithful and respectful toward the direction of her husband Kardama, who was one of the Prajapatis or generators of human beings in the universe. O great sage, she thus began to worship the master of the universe, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in everyone's heart. So any questions or comments? He's also a Vishnu incarnation, but he came with a specific purpose. I'm sorry, the question was that he thought he was a Vishnu avatar rather than a Shaktivesha avatar. So I was explaining a Shaktivesha avatar is an avatar or an incarnation who comes with a specific purpose in life, a specific purpose to achieve. And Kapila's specific purpose was to propagate the knowledge of Sankhya, or Sankhya philosophy, to explain that method of understanding the material world and the universe and the Supreme Lord. He's a Vishnu avatar. He's not one of the Purusha avatars. Those are the Vishnu, the Sri Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Kiradakshaya Vishnu. Those are the Vishnu avatars. But in one sense, every incarnation is a form of Vishnu, so we can say they're avatars, they're Vishnu avatars. He's described as Vishnu Tattva, yes, but not as one of the Purusha avatars. Any other questions? Maharaj. This chapter is about renunciation. It's called the Renunciation of Kardama Muni. And this verse and its discussion in the purport also refers to renunciation. There are different ways of looking at renunciation, different meanings of renunciation, different types of renunciation. The Naistika Brahmachari is a very rare occurrence. And by the freedom developed by such celibacy, great souls like Narada Muni have the capacity to travel anywhere and everywhere without any restriction. Celibacy and renunciation have a very powerful effect. Even from a material point of view, Srila Prabhupada sometimes pointed to the example of Gandhi, who was said to be celibate for a long period of time, and he attributed his material power to the fact that he made such a terrible vow and kept a vow of celibacy for such a long time. The higher regions, especially Goloka Vrindavan, the spiritual abode, which consists of three quarters of the whole creation, is reserved for those who are able to maintain this, what we might call the final vow, or the most difficult of the four vows that we take, for most people, to remain celibate, to give up the enactment of sex desire. It is said that in this age of Kali, certain sacrifices are not recommended, among which is sannyas and certain types of sacrifice. Prabhupada discusses this briefly later on in this chapter about the difficulty and says that it is prohibited generally in this age because people cannot follow the rigidity of such a vow. So therefore in this Kali Yuga, not very recommended. Of course, Prabhupada started the process because he wanted people to know that it must be done, and for some it is necessary. But it's very difficult. Nonetheless, in order to enter into the supreme destination, the tripad vibhuti, the three quarters of the creation, one must come to the point of renouncing everything. So in this way, renunciation is generally, in its traditional sense, reserved for older age. We hear very often of people saying they will, in their older age, they'll go to the Himalayas and meditate, and then everything will be all right. And that's a custom that was prevalent and followed somewhat more in previous times. Nowadays, it's very, very difficult. And meditation is not at all even recommended in this age of Kali, because the tendency for anyone meditating, even in a very remote place, is to think of sex life. Even great yogis had this problem. They would sometimes be underwater, they would be in the forest, and they would see animals mating, and different things would remind them, and they would fall down. So it's very, very difficult. And also, thinking one can give up everything and renounce in old age is kind of like trying to study for an exam the night before. It's not practicing throughout one's life in the spirit of renunciation. The spirit of enjoyment is a very pervasive phenomena in this part of the world. In fact, everyone is raised in this country with the spirit of enjoyment. But the spirit of voluntary restriction, or voluntarily giving up certain things, or tapasya, as we call it, is not taught really anywhere. Some people, because the time and the place have resulted in so many difficulties for people gratifying their senses, they're undertaking renunciation as a matter of necessity, as a matter of ultimate frustration. And therefore, many people are trying to become either Buddhists or nihilists or impersonalists, or somehow trying to lose themselves in matter. Scientists say that matter is just reducible to ultimately atomic particles, which are neutrons and electrons. And there's so much space between a neutron, the nucleus of an atom, and the electrons which surround it, that there's almost no substance, no hard substance there. So that's one of their theories, that even though it feels hard and you can hurt yourself very easily by being in a car accident or something like that, actually everything is just space mainly. Because the distance between, say, like an electron and a nucleus of an atom is like the same distance as the astronomers say between the sun and Earth or Venus or something like that. So it's mostly just space. So this idea, people try to renounce their world by saying that there's really nothing there, there's nothing to begin with, so we can just sort of merge into everything and be nothing, and everything is nothing, and everything is one, and God is one, and I am you, and you are me. So this is the type of renunciation that most people think of when they think of renunciation. They try to disappear somehow. And this is really nothing much more than another kind of suicide. So it's a way of just trying to not exist any longer, or trying to exist in some senseless place where there's no thought, no meaning, no reality to existence. But this is, for many people, the ultimate reality. In Krishna consciousness, we understand that renunciation, as it says in Bhagavad Gita, is not one who lights no fire, does no work, but one who actively engages in works of devotion. So Prahlad Maharaj taught that from the beginning of life, one should enter into the spirit of renunciation, not wait till the fag end of life, when actually it seems so easy or possible because it's in the future, but actually it's more and more difficult because one becomes increasingly attached to the things of this life. And as they say, those who have gone through some sort of a death experience, they remember everything in their past life. So it's an accumulation of past lives and present lives that in the latter part of life, it's very difficult to suddenly accept renunciation because attachment is so strong. Prabhupada tells a story of one Mohammedan king, was Ashok or Akbar, I can't remember which one, who had a minister, and he asked him, he was his trusting minister, how long does this attachment last? Because when we reach the fag end of life, since we're not able to gratify our senses, we can't actually physically even experience sex, how doesn't that desire go away naturally? And his minister said, no, it stays right up until the moment of death. So he didn't believe him and forgot about the incident. And then sometime later, the minister came into the king's place, palace, and quarters, and said, please come with me, something very important you must observe. So he was always submissive to anything that the minister considered urgent. So they went out together. And he said, now we're going to enter into the home of a very old man. He's very old. And before we go, I want you to stop at the quarters of your daughter and bring her along with us. So they stopped, and the king's daughter was a very beautiful young princess, came along with them. So he said, when we go into this man's house, the three of us, I want you to observe very carefully. He's on his deathbed. He's only got a few more days to live, and I want you to observe what he does and what he's seeing. So they went in and talked to him and gave some words of consolation, of condolence or whatever, for his having to leave this world, as a king would to his subject. And the king was observing very, very carefully. And after they left, they were walking along the way, and the minister was looking at the king, and he said, did you watch him? And he said, yes. He said, now I understand what you told me once before, because the minute that we walked in through the door, his eyes just stayed on my daughter the whole time. They never went away from her face, from the time we entered to the time we left. So now I accept what you say, that this desire remains very deep in everyone, even up until the moment of death. So Narada Muni and the Kumaras we see them as always having a very fresh and youthful appearance, brought about by their celibacy. Actually, I was reading one story, I think it was in the Chaitanya Mangala, about the elixir that Lord Brahma carries. Sometimes it is known as Sanjeevanam. I think when he was coming to get Hiranyakashipu to hear his demands, that when his bones were all that were left and his body was being eaten away by the ants, that he poured this on him and he regained his life. Lord Shiva was singing. He's a great musical performer, musical genius, was singing the glories of the Lord, accompanied by Narada and Ganesh. They're playing their instruments, and the Lord was very attracted by this music, and he said that if you continue to play such beautiful music, I will melt in ecstasy. So Lord Shiva got very inspired by this and started to sing more and more loudly, and the Lord actually began to melt. So then he immediately stopped out of fear. He became very horrified to see that the Lord's body was actually melting, but he gathered up this liquid, which is known as a liquid Brahman, and put it in his little kumandalu and carried it with him and saved it as the most sacred substance in the universe. So this was another way of his knowing renunciation, that the most sacred thing in the world is to give up everything. And so he eternally carries this with him. In Krishna consciousness, our renunciation is also meant to begin early in life, or at least early in our life of devotees. And this is done through performing very deep acts of devotion, acts in which we try to think that there is one goal, and that goal is to reach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even if it means shunning the things of this material world. That's the life of a Vaishnava. It doesn't depend on going to higher planetary systems. In fact, there's one verse where the Lord is saying, my abode is not the place where I am. I'm not to be found in Vaikuntha, I'm not to be found in the hearts of the great yogis, but you can find me where my devotees are chanting my holy names. This is one of the many ways that Vaishnavas remember that the holy names are the reality of Krishna, that he can be realized through chanting his holy names. And in processing Krishna consciousness, in carrying out one's duties to perform devotional service, one actually comes to the point of having a direct communion with the Supreme Lord. This is the renunciation engaged in by devotees. This is called by many things. Prabhupada called it yuktam vairagyam, as Rupa Goswami taught, that to engage in active works in devotion, the whole world can be spiritualized. So in other words, one does not have to come to the complete state of outward renunciation, sort of like walking around barefoot all the time and not touching anything material. So it was once the Prabhupada was criticized, or he told us sometimes he was criticized for using so many technological things. How is it that you can use a tape recorder and you can use a dictaphone and you're flying in airplanes, you're driving in cars? And Prabhupada in one case said very simply, he said, if I had to walk everywhere, it would take me 10 years to get to London. But now I can go there in 10 hours. So there's no question of his following some kind of an artificial type of renunciation, adhering to some tradition. But it was taught by all the acharyas, by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati also. We've seen some photographs of him sitting in a British car, a convertible with a suit type of coat and a very silken, fancy-looking turban, because he was going to meet somebody important. But during Chaturmas, he used to sit on the stone floor of his kutir with his hands held behind his back and eat a mixture of dal and rice off the floor with his tongue for 4 months out of the year. So that's the principle of yuktam vairagyam, not that one has to become absorbed in material things or artificially renounce everything, but to engage according to time, place, and circumstance in acts of devotion. So this is not only renunciation, but is also the param drishtam, the higher taste. One gets the higher taste, just as Kardama Muni, his renunciation was possible because he got the impetus from Kapila Muni. He got the desire. He became infused with that desire to renounce everything, and he engaged in real renunciation. So renunciation occurs for a higher purpose. It's not just giving up, but it's gaining something much greater. When we met Prabhupada, we thought his very attractive personality. He was irresistibly attractive as a sage, as a great learned scholar, a very distinguished gentleman, a very compassionate person. But to the young people who followed him then, he was also, at least we came to know, that he was also a renunciant. He wasn't with any family. He had no security. He had no money. He had no followers. He had no fixed place of residence. He was just on the loose, so to speak. And yet, he was very attractive. And that attractiveness, once he talked about, he said that now I've given everything up, but you shouldn't be afraid if you have to do this too. He said that he was horrified when he was first asked, but because he was encouraged to do this and inspired to do it, he did it out of duty. He became a sannyasin. And he said, so I sometimes was thinking, what about my family, my wife, my children? But now, he said, I have so many children, hundreds of children. They're coming to this temple, and they're taking better care of me than my own children back in Calcutta. So with that, there was a sense that Srila Prabhupada was not at all, and as he said, my point is that if someone becomes attached to Krishna and gives everything up for Krishna, he never becomes the loser. And we could see by his example that he was always happy, always blissful. He wasn't feeling like he had lost anything. So at some point, those who are on the path of Krishna consciousness, some do it maybe in later in life, but those who can enter into this spirit of renunciation actually become very powerful and very happy. And even those who are not at all prepared to enter into such kind of difficult tapasya, they become inspired. They become enthusiastic to see people who are always happy. Sometimes they ask us, why is it, how is it that you can always be happy? There was one disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati named Kinchana Krishnadas. There's a little samadhi to him in Nandagram area. There's a picture, a large black and white picture, about 3x3. And a lot of people come there to worship him. And he was a devotee who always chanted constantly, one of the rare souls who chanted almost nonstop. And when he chanted, he used to chant, Hare Krishna, like that. And if people tried to engage him in conversation, he would almost always refuse to talk to anyone because he felt the material world was very dangerous. He was educated. He had a college degree. He was knowledgeable in many arts, but he chose to not engage in any conversation, just to chant the holy name, because he was told by his Guru Maharaj that this is the highest form of realization. You will realize Krishna within the tongue. So this was his life. At one time, a group of his godbrothers complained that he wasn't doing anything. He was just sitting around. So a friend of mine knew him and actually lived with him for a while, one of Prabhupada's disciples. So he told us this story, or he found out that he was, when these complaints were lodged, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, "All right, what we'll do is we'll put an ad in the newspapers and we'll advertise that anyone who can come and chant Hare Krishna 24 hours a day can come and live in our ashram. We'll give them a free lodging, a place to stay, and room and board. We'll give them all they can eat, and they can live for the rest of their lives." So that was the advertisement. Nobody answered the ad. Or maybe we heard, another version is that one person answered it and stayed for about 5 days and then left. So he was vindicated and went through his life chanting Hare Krishna. The only time that I knew that he interfered was once he found one devotee was there, one Western devotee, took to smoking ganja, and he chastised him once and told him, you must chant Hare Krishna. You'll get more ecstasy if you do this rather than smoking this marijuana. So, very great soul who realized there are many types, as I was saying, of renunciation. And of course, ultimately, we are practicing for our time in the spiritual world, and we may just be chanting there. But even there, although everyone is always chanting, they're also doing some service. Maybe this Akinchana Krishna Das is there chanting now. That's his service. But this is a preparation, our Krishna consciousness, for ongoing service. It is said that even the beautiful damsels who live in the palaces of Krishna and Dwarka in the spiritual world are always engaged. They're cleaning down the beautiful marble and jeweled walls, even though they're never dusty and there's nothing to clean, because it's so relishable to engage in devotional service. Whatever devotional service we engage in, wherever it is and whatever kind it is, it's a preparation for this type of renunciation. So to be active and to preach is required. It's very lovable by Lord Krishna. On one of Srila Prabhupada's disappearance days in Vrindavan, the devotees always get together and they have remembrances of Prabhupada. I remember there was a talk given by His Holiness Tamal Krishna Goswami, and he gave a very interesting talk. He was engaged in getting the property in Juhu. There was a Mr. Nair who was making difficulty for the devotees. I'm sure you've all read about this in the Prabhupada Lilamrita. So he and Shamasundar and some other devotees were working every single day, going to the court and doing legal battle. It was ISKCON against Mr. Nair and company or whatever. And this went on for actually years. And they would have consultations with Prabhupada. He would say, go and tell him this, go and tell him that. And at some point it got so difficult that they had to fire all the lawyers and get a new batch of lawyers because we found out that they were conspiring with one another to get as much money as they can, as they could, and were taking money away from us. So it went on and on. All kinds of things happened. So in his remembrance, Dzogchen Maharaj was saying that he had approached Prabhupada, that he was so intensely involved with other devotees. And at some point, they even advised Prabhupada that they didn't want to continue. That they knew, that he said he had learned more and memorized more lines in the Bombay Municipal Code than he knew verses in Bhagavad Gita, and that he didn't think this was very good for a devotee to be so immersed in worldly affairs. So Prabhupada explained to him for a long time what and why this was being done, and at one point he said to him that, concluding, if you give just one life, your whole life and everything, for Krishna, Krishna will be satisfied. Of course, he went on to explain that that wasn't the only thing that Prabhupada meant for a devotee to do. He was very concerned that they read and they follow their vows and they chant and they enter into the spirit of service to Krishna through renunciation, but also to enter into the spirit of service by doing whatever Krishna wants at the time, whatever is necessary, even though it may seem to be sometimes taking us away. But if that's the will of the Supreme Lord, the spiritual master, then one can engage in such things and it will still please the Supreme Lord. So in this case, we're seeing how one great soul, a great yogi, fulfilled certain obligations and then in a later stage of life became very renounced devotee. So we'll stop here. Maitreya Uvacha Tava Shvasya Jagat Srashta Kumarai Sahanaradaha Hangsahang Sena Yanena Tridhama Paramam Yayo. Sri Maitreya said, after thus speaking to Kardama Muni and his wife Devahuti, Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe, who is also known as Hangsa, went back to the highest of the three planetary systems on his swan carrier with the four Kumaras and Narada. Any comments or questions? Malabhakta. Well, Krishna is said to be Rishikesha, Rishikesha, Rishikena Sevanam. He's the master of the senses. One who is perfect in renunciation, as it is said, has, and in surrender, has desires that are non-different from Krishna's desires. And desirelessness, in this case, or giving up material desires, does not mean giving up desires. These material desires are actually perverted reflections of pure and perfect desires that exist eternally in the spiritual world. In fact, everything that exists here, all desires and relationships, all psychological tendencies exist in their pure form in the spiritual world. So one who studies Krishna, Vyavasayat Miku Buddhir, with very single-minded attention, Samado Navidiyate, becomes very pure and is able actually to give up being bewildered. It is said also in the second chapter that one who is attached to material things and bewildered by them cannot really focus on the Supreme Lord with single-minded attention. So there's that other saying in Christian literature that more difficult to pass a camel or an elephant through an eye of a needle than for a rich man to go to heaven. So similarly, to give up material desire and to fix one's desire on spiritual desire is what is being taught here. Krishna is the reservoir of pleasure. He's the most beautiful person. And he has the most interesting and variegated service in the most beautiful spiritual, the most beautiful place that can be imagined by the conditioned soul. So that's the meaning of renunciation here, is to find the param drishtam, or the higher taste. So even though it might seem that one is retreating, so to speak, or escaping, Vyavasayat Mika Buddhir, if that single-pointed attention is focused on Krishna, then a new vista of the spiritual world opens up, a new world of desires, spiritual desires, a new way of gratifying the senses. All of the senses are completely surrounded by Krishna consciousness. Therefore, Prabhupada created many nice pictures and many beautiful, wonderful dishes to eat, many nice flowers and incenses to smell. So this is like the banyan tree. It's the reflection. It's the perversion of the reality, the greater positive reality. Today people are saying we want to do things positive, be positive or proactive. So the real proactivity is to become immersed in thoughts and activities that are in the spiritual world. Yes? Yeah, that's one of the qualities of a sadhu, Tatiksha Karunaka Surida Sarvadeinam. Very patient, and Rupa Goswami also recommends this. One should be, in order to be successful in devotional service, in the Upadeshamrita, and the second verse talks about how one has to be very patient, enthusiastic, very convinced. One has to be very positive, confident, then patient. One has to follow in the footsteps of the great acharyas. One has to engage in all the different rituals, the Vedic rituals of spiritual life, right? And one has to avoid bad association. These things will help us in Krishna consciousness. So we see in the lives of all the great acharyas, these characteristics are manifest. Daksha was ordered by Lord Vishnu to progenate the universe, but Narada Muni made all his sons celibate at an early life. But he persevered on the order of the Supreme Lord, and ultimately his daughters fulfilled this task. So we see in the lives of all these great souls, even faced with difficult obstacles and reverses, Hanuman, Arjuna, they were fighting in a very difficult situation. They were outnumbered, outwitted, outweaponed in every way. And because they were carrying the order of the Supreme Lord with them, they were able to forbear so many things and be constant and succeed ultimately because Krishna was with them. So if Krishna is with you, Mari Krishna Rake Ke Rake Krishna Mari Ke, nobody can stop the progress, nobody can kill you if Krishna wants you to live. So that's our meditation. When we say we meditate upon the spiritual master, in this case you're speaking of Srila Prabhupada, we can meditate by reading about his activities, how perseverant he was. His whole life is based on carrying out the order of his spiritual master, print books, go to the West, preach in English, and by just meditating on those simple words, everything began. So I actually have to be off to Australia fairly soon, so I can't take any more questions, but thank you very much for listening. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.